Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show, The Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have another super guest. Her name is Lynn. And Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy.
Now, Lynn, let's talk a little bit about who you are and what you do, and then what I will do is ask you some questions I think the listeners might want to know.
Awesome. My name is Lynn Nitz, and I own my own business. It's called Consulting by Design. I've been a practicing witch for 27 years. I was traditionally trained within an Alexandrian coven many, many years ago, and I've never looked back since then.
It's kind of funny because I'm sure if somebody just tuned in, they heard, and I'm a witch, it's like, what? So when you say that you've been trained many, many years ago, what kind of training does a Wicca witch do?
The training that I've been through actually covers many areas. It not only covers the history.
You're breaking up a little bit, Lynn.
The history of the craft covers not only current history, but also back to the time of Gerald Gardner when the witchcraft laws in England were repealed in 1953. But beyond that, we look back to our ancestors and back to ancient man and their cultures. Being traditionally trained, we not only cover our history, but we also cover different areas, meditation, the meanings of plants and herbs and how they interact with us in our daily lives. We also cover our reverence for nature and life itself.
So when people hear about Wicca, they go, oh, that's a horrible cult. You know, they do spells, they do this, and they do that. And that's not really what Wicca is all about, is it?
No, absolutely not. It is a legally recognized religion within the United States, as most other religions are legally recognized. We just recently put the pentacle on the headstones of fallen soldiers who were Wiccans and who died for this country and for all the constitutional rights of all people. Just as all other soldiers, when they go into war, they fight for our constitutional rights. We just actually, earlier this year, were able to finally get the pentacle as one of the symbols of our faith put on our deceased soldiers' graves. I'm sorry.
Can I interrupt you just one second?
Sure.
Why do you guys think that that was so important for those soldiers?
As anybody who's been in the military knows, their faith is tested on an hourly, daily basis when they are in combat. Their faith not only in God, however they may worship, or their faith within themselves. When in an unfortunate situation where any serviceman or servicewoman dies in combat and they come back and they're buried with all the rights that they have fought for, one of the biggest things that's a part of that right is to have the symbol of their faith placed upon their headstone. And earlier this year, Wiccans across the world were actually granted that right by getting the pentacle as one of the symbols of our faith to be placed upon their headstones.
Yeah, I think it's very important that people understand that the Wiccans who have also fought and died for our country are as equally as important as any other religion that is out there. And you know, again, I think people have a very bad concept of what, you know, the religion part of the Wiccan is all about. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything gets very, let's say, movie-wise, you know, well, this is, a Wiccan does this and they do that. And it always shows the bad side of what your whole group is capable of doing. It
doesn't
really show the good stuff. I mean, you have many Wiccans that are members from around the world who do very good things every single day for people.
Most definitely. Most definitely. You, for the most part, you may be working next to a Wiccan and never ever know it. For most part, we come straight out, never know it, within the main business community. I'm not just talking about retail or about people who are like working in you know, a little bit off the beaten path workplaces. I'm talking about in major corporations. You would never know that possibly one of your coworkers is a Wiccan unless they came straight out and told you. But even in that particular place, religion does play a factor in how good you are as a worker. Religion plays a factor in how good you are as a person. And that is what the majority of Wiccans strive for. We have been put under the spell of Hollywood for so long as to how we act, how we think, how we work, that in trying to dispel that, we've sort of taken back seat to that Hollywood viewpoint and become very, very conservative. We're very, very cautious about talking about our faith. We're very, very cautious about talking to who we talk to. And we are very cautious because we are very, very aware that all too soon the tides could turn and it could be unfortunate, not only for us, but for other people who are not the mainstream religion.
Mm-hmm. Now, is a Wiccan and a pagan the same?
No. Most, if not all, witches are pagan, but not all pagans are witches. And because paganism is basically an umbrella term for anything that is not one of the big three religions. And being a pagan means that you follow a different set of rules or beliefs or dogma, you step to the tune of a different drummer. You don't necessarily worship just one deity or one godhead. You may worship several deities, several godheads. You may have different gods or goddesses for different aspects of every day of your life or every hour of your life.
So when people start to compare the different religions, is there another religion out there that you guys can acquaint yourself with, or is it just totally, totally different?
The Wicca or the craft, it's a nature-based religion. I don't really think that there is something you can compare it to that would come even close to worshiping nature in the way that we do. The Druids and the Druidic orders, they worship nature very, very strongly. But in all actuality, they're still not recognized as a religion. They're not a religious order. They are practitioners of a specific belief system, but it's not necessarily a religious system.
Okay. Now, you have been a high priestess in Wicca for how long?
For over 18 years.
And what is a high priestess? What's the definition of a high priestess?
A high priestess is basically somebody who has been through a series of training, a series of initiations. Initiations, in our case, mean that you've attained a certain level of understanding, and initiation is a way of marking that recognition, of saying, you've now acquired this amount of knowledge. We're therefore bestowing upon you this particular rank. Being a high priestess means that you have attained a huge amount of knowledge, not over a minimum amount of time, but a huge amount of time. It took me 7 years to become a high priestess, and every single day that I have been on the path of being a priestess, a witch, I have not stopped to think what my life would be if I had chosen something differently. I meditate daily. I say prayers daily. And prayers are basically our form of, I mean, prayers are in many forms. They're spell work, but they are also prayers. They are welcoming in our deities, who we see as dual, basically God and goddess, welcoming them into our lives and saying thank you, or saying, can you please help me through this problem? And all of those things are what makes a good priestess, being able to pass that knowledge on to others, because we don't proselytize, we don't go out and seek members. When we have members who come to us, it is our jobs as high priestesses and high priests to be able to pass on the knowledge that we have gained in all the years that we've been practicing, pass that on to others so that they can find that same type of meaning, that same level of understanding in their lives that we've found.
And being a high priestess or a high priest, does that mean that you can have a covenant?
Yes, I have my coven, and it right now there's 9 active members within it. We get together at full moons, at new moons, and at Sabbaths 8 times a year. Sabbaths are our high holy days. We have 4 high holy days and 4 lesser holy days. And we get together and we worship our gods within a sacred space. We pray. We work on healing magic. If somebody has an injury, we send out healing energy. Just as other religions work on different things, when they sit down to pray, whether it's at home or whether it's in a church or a temple, when they sit down to pray, we do the same thing. We pray every day. We pray with each other. We work with each other. Just as any other religion. We're not that very different in how we practice. It's the words that are the difference.
So if somebody joined your coven,
mm-hmm.
is it then the high priest or high priestess' job to help them understand the language of the religion so that they can also possibly grow and have their own covenant?
Yes, yes. When we do training starts out with a very, very basic introductory level of classes. Those classes are designed to give a person a better understanding of the differences within the craft itself. They're to pique a person's questing mind to ask questions. One of the things that I've always told my students that was told to me is there's never a stupid question. The only stupid question is the one that's not asked.
Mm-hmm.
And I pass that on to my students, and I pass it on to my initiates, and I pass it on to my priestesses and my priests. And the reason being is because if you stop asking, no one is going to know that question.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be a very, very good question that not only you yourself need to know, but others as well that you may run into.
Is there a certain age that you can allow them to come to you to, you know, join the covenant? Or
mm-hmm.
if, say, for example, Lynn, I know you have children.
Yes.
Okay? So having children in the family, have they been raised knowing the ways of the Wiccan, or, you know, do you try to keep the two separate?
That's it's a very touchy subject, and it is very, very personal for most people within the craft. we have, there's two trains of thought on that. Both parents are within the same coven, and they choose to bring their child up within their tradition and within their religion. Then usually that child is taught on the side or with other children within the coven whose parents have agreed that they want their child to be taught. They're usually taught separate from the rest of the coven. No one in, and I say this, no one, and that's because that's how most traditional covens will look at things, and that is no one under the age of 18 is admitted, because 18 is the age of their coming of age. And it also means at 18 they can make decisions for themselves. We are dealing with aspects of a religion that can change the way you look, change the way you think about your reality. It's not only meditation. Meditation in the amount that is needed for anybody practicing this religion is a huge thing. It takes devotion to meditation. It takes devotion to where you want to go on this path. Most 18-year-olds barely understand where they're going the next day.
Well, that would be true.
And so the craft puts the cutoff, like craft, I'll speak for the majority of the traditional craft, because I don't want to speak for other sects of the religion, because there are so many.
Mm-hmm.
Within traditional craft, our cutoff is coming of age, which is 18. That is when a person becomes viable for themselves. And we do that because there are things that are going to go on within circle, within a coven, that may be disturbing to somebody under the age of 18. There are some covens out there that will not even take a person until they're 25. And the reason is because they want them to work out all their everything in their life before they start thinking about what they want to lay down for the rest of their lives, the path that they want to put their feet upon for the rest of their lives.
Is there any age that is too old?
No, absolutely not. Being within circle, we don't start training until they're a minimum age of 18. But a maximum age, no. No, I've seen people in circle, starting in circle when they're 65, when they're 70 years old. They've been through 3-4 different kinds of religions. They've been to different sects of different religions and haven't found exactly what they're looking for. And then they talk to somebody who knows somebody, and eventually they get hooked up with somebody within the craft, and they go to an open circle and find out, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking for. This is the connection that I need to have made, and I wish I would have done it years ago. But just as there are people who come into the craft late, there are also people who leave the craft. And there's nothing wrong with that. The craft, for some people, fills a niche for a specific amount of time until they can get a better understanding of what they want spiritually. And I've known people who are in the craft for 25 years and find a different path and embrace it with just as much fervor as they embrace the craft. It doesn't mean that the path that they're on is wrong or what they've done is wrong by changing their direction, because ultimately it is the person who matters in this. It is their belief not only in themselves but in their gods.
Do you think, Lynn, that a lot of people are, for lack of a better term, let's just call it brainwashed thinking, that they have to follow what they were taught to believe as they were growing up?
I agree. I won't say it's brainwashed. We are a culture of we do what we've been taught. That's how we're brought up. Do the same thing that I do. And unless we push ourselves, or unless we're allowed to push ourselves into different directions, just as anything. The easiest example I can give is an entire family, 3-4 generations of policemen. And all of a sudden, it's been all the men who've been policemen in the family. And now the oldest daughter has a child, and it's a girl. And they're thinking, okay, we're going to make her, we're going to make her a policewoman because, so many generations have been policemen within the family. And she grows up and says, I don't want to do this. And she changes direction. It's been in her blood to be that, around that mm-hmm. for so many years that for her to strike out on her own and say, I don't want to do what my parents or my grandparents want to do, of course is going to be met with some type of resistance from or within that family. It doesn't mean that it's wrong to change directions. It's just what that person's path is. That person's path is their own.
Okay. Now we're going to leave this for just a few minutes because I want to talk a little bit more about you yourself, Lynn. You also, and I don't know if you're still doing, but you used to do readings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I spent nine years on the psychic circuit. I used to go and do not only psychic fairs, but I used to have a huge clientele, and I did that for 9 years.
Now, do you still do readings?
I still do readings on occasion. I don't do them with the frequency that I used to do them. But I do them on occasion. It gave me a better insight into myself, as well as getting me to stretch the way I thought, mm-hmm. because I was seeing how other people thought.
Okay. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you to ask you questions either about the Wiccan or a reading, what number could they reach you at?
They could reach me at 708-743-6697.
You want to repeat that one more time?
Sure. 708-743-6697.
Okay. Now, you also have a group mm-hmm. That signals a phone call. So let's take the phone call and see if they have a question. Hello, caller, are you
sure.
there?
Yes, my mother has passed on, and I was wondering if she has any messages for me.
Okay, the only thing right now, what we're doing is we're going to finish talking about the Wiccan stuff. So maybe the last 10 minutes of the show, if you call back, maybe we can answer that for you, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So there's a piece of property that is located in Indiana.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to talk about that a little
bit? Sure. I'm an elder steward of a piece of property in southern Indiana. It is about an hour south of Indianapolis. It's called Lothlorien Nature Sanctuary. The main company the corporation that owns it is Elvin Home Incorporated. It is a federal 501c3 nonprofit organization. We hold two main festivals every year. The first one is in the spring, which is basically breaking out of cabin fever mode, and that's called Elf Fest, and that runs usually the week before Memorial Day. And we held another one in the fall, which is to welcome in the harvest, and that's called Wild Magic Gathering. And it's a wonderful place. It's 109 acres of streams, of trails, of primitive camping. When I say primitive camping, I mean you bring it in, you bring it out.
Okay.
So it's basically pack in, pack out.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an ecumenical religious organization. All faiths are welcome there. There are shrines to so many different things within the land. And the land itself has been used magically and spiritually for over 20 years. So it is a wonderful, wonderful experience.
If somebody wanted to come to one of these fests,
mm-hmm.
how would they, you know, get a hold? Would they get a hold of you, Lynn, or is there a website? How would
there is a website, and we can. The website is actually elvinhome.org. I'm sorry.
Okay. So spell it again and repeat it again, please.
It is www.elvinhome.org.
Okay.
And that'll take you right directly to our website. And our website actually has a photo tour. It has registration information. It has all the dates for all the events for the coming year. And it allows you to contact us and ask us questions.
Okay. Now, for those fests that you're having,
mm-hmm.
can children come to them?
Right.
So children are welcome.
Yes, most definitely. We are very family-oriented. That is one of the biggest keys to Lothlorien. We are very family-oriented. We do have, there are events that go on for children. They don't go on all the time, but there are events that go on for children during the festivals. It's a wonderful way to get out into nature with your child and get away from the hubbub of the city. There is no electricity on the land except right up at the main gate. Everything that's, any type of electricity that is on the land is all run by solar power.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's been a labor of love to bring everything that we can to Lothlorien.
Okay. If somebody came to one of the fests,
mm-hmm.
what could they expect to find there, Lynn?
What could they expect to find?
Are there like crafters? Are there?
Oh yes, there's at least anywhere between 10 to sometimes as many as 20 to 25 different vendors. They could. There's any number of things. There's everything from incense to sarongs to skirts to pants to food vendors that are there. There's jewelry vendors there, any number of things.
Okay, now, are there, during the weeks that they're open and available for people to come, do they have certain times that they say they have, like, meditation for people, or they have, like, different kinds of events just designed for Wicca?
Not specifically designed for Wicca. They sometimes have impromptu rituals that are put on. There are workshops that are always either scheduled or impromptu that go on. There's always something changing and different about Lothlorien and about their events. There is usually more of a free flow than a scheduled tracking system. And we are very much unlike other festivals that have a specific, you know, three-track system. There's something going on at any given time. Lothlorien doesn't have that. There are times and place and spots put aside for different events, but there is nothing continually going on. It is a place to relax. It is a place to commune with nature. It is a place to sit around a campfire and talk and learn from your neighbor, somebody you may have just met the day before.
Which I think is pretty interesting, because you know, everybody has a story. I really don't care who you are. Everybody
mm-hmm.
has a story. And I think that would be a lot of fun to just sit and listen to some of the different stories that, you know, may come up while you're sitting by the campfire.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And considering that we have anywhere between 13 and 15 fire pits that are open at any given time on the land, that's where people congregate. They congregate around the campfires because they are all community fire pits. No one group has a monopoly on any fire pit. It the fire pits are there for everybody. They're located in different circles, basically to bring people who camp within those circles together.
Okay, now do people come from all over the United States, maybe from different parts of the world?
Most definitely. We've actually had people come from England, from Canada. We had a couple people come from Austria a couple of years ago. We've had people from different religions other than just Wicca. We've had people from who are Buddhists come. We've had several Hindi groups come out. We've had Santerian groups come out. We've actually had several events that mainstream Christians have put on at Lothlorien because it is such a wonderfully spiritual place.
That's pretty cool. That's very important. So now let's go back to a little bit about the Wiccan stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody, say somebody belonged to one covenant, could they stop that covenant and go join a different covenant?
They could. Usually when people leave one group and go to a different group, and they've left for whatever reason, mostly they're leaving because they're disgruntled with something that is going on within a group. Depending on how they leave, if they leave and they've talked to the priest and priestess of the group and said, I can't do this, there's something within the group that is just not agreeing with them, usually at that particular point, the priest and priestess of the group will try to help them find another place or another home that they can train with or worship with. If they want to leave completely, they can. It would be very, very difficult in any way, shape, or form to hold somebody to do something that they don't want to do, because the amount of bad energy that they could bring to the group would actually be more hurtful to the group than helpful. So ultimately, if somebody wants to leave the group, they're always welcome to leave the group. If they want to go to a different group, it's up to the other group whether or not they accept them. Mm-hmm. Because in some ways, other groups may not accept them. They may say, no, this is the path that you chose. This is where you need to work things out at. A lot of times when people leave one group, they usually become solitaire. They usually practice by themselves for a period of time just to understand more about themselves and more about what they want and where the differences were. Why did they leave? What needs were not being met?
Okay. Does each covenant have a high priestess and a high priest?
Traditionally, most covens have a high priest and a high priestess. There are groups that are all women groups that have only priestesses. There are groups that are all men groups that have only priests. They each have a specific area that they are working with or working to attain. They may have different beliefs, but ultimately, the bottom line to all of this and to everything within the craft is your connection to deity. And that's the biggest one that all Wiccans hold very, very firmly, is that connection to deity. If that connection to deity means that you have to practice within a circle of all women or within all men, and that's where you find your comfort, then by all means, practice within one of those groups. If you find that you need the duality of practicing within a mixed coven, a coven that has both males and females in it, and that's how you perceive deity to manifest through the male and the female, then that's what you need to seek out. But all ways of finding God and goddess are available.
Okay. And you talked about the circle. You mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what that is?
A circle is what we draw, not only physically upon the ground, but also in the air around us when we come to worship. We come to worship in a circle because the circle not only contains the energy that we raise within it, but it also keeps us protected from any kind of influences that may be coming from the outside. So our circle is not only to protect us, but also to contain energy.
Okay. And when you do rituals,
uh-huh.
Does anything ever really get sacrificed?
The only thing that ever usually gets sacrificed is we do a libation at the end of our ritual, and that is usually consisting of the ritual we call cakes and wine, which is basically any type of stuff or any type of drink. Drinks could be anything from water to wine to cider to fruit juice. Cakes can be anything from small cakes to pieces of apple, pieces of pear, just about anything. Cookies are real sacred. That's the only kind of sacrifice that we do. It is a sacrifice of saying, we've now partaken of sustenance for ourselves. Now it's time to give sustenance back to the gods that we worship.
What do you think, Lynn, is the most important ritual that a coven can do?
It's different for all traditions. Our high holy days are our most important ones within the craft, and those are excuse me, those are Samhain and Imbolc. They are Beltane and also Lammas. Those are the four festivals that actually mark the seasonal change. Samhain, which is not only the ending of one year, but it is also the beginning of another year.
Now, does the Samhain end the same like as New Year's Eve type?
No. Samhain for us is basically 3 days of, it's the 3 days around what is traditionally called Halloween. And those 3 days belong neither to the old year nor to the new year. They are 3 days of in-between time that the what we believe is the veil is very thin between the worlds. Our ancestors are allowed to come through. Our ancestors are allowed to be around us, to talk with us through dreams and through meditation, and to be a part of our lives for that small amount of time. We welcome them back in. And at the end of those 3 days, the veil thickens up again. Our ancestors go back, and we don't lose contact with them, but it becomes more difficult to contact them. So Samhain is probably by far one of our most important days, but it is also not any more important than, I would say, any of the other holidays that we celebrate.
Okay, so for the other holidays, you named four of them.
Mm-hmm.
How do they differ?
They're all seasonal. Imbolc comes around February 2nd. That is the Festival of Lights. That's when we start truly noticing that it is now getting lighter. The sun is staying up a little bit longer. And we welcome back that sun with what is called the Festival of Lights. We start lighting every candle we can in the house to welcome back the sun. We're joyous that the sun is coming back into our lives. We're joyous that it's lighting our way. The next one is Beltane, or May Day, which comes around the beginning, which is basically the end of August, beginning of May, and May Eve. And it is a celebration, it is our fertility celebration. It is the beginning of spring. It is when everybody wants to just break out of their shells from the long winter, come together and say, okay, fine. If I'm single, now it's time to find a mate.
Okay.
If I'm not single, if I'm with a partner, now it's time to not only maybe be fertile of the body, but fertile of the mind. And we start planting our seeds for the coming year at that particular time. And like I said, it's not only fertility of the mind, but it's fertility of the body, of the soul. It's fertility however you want to embrace it.
Okay, and that's actually the end of April, beginning of May.
Right, okay. Right. And then we have Lammas, which is our first harvest festival. That is when we bring to basically a large banquet table, our feast, our first gifts from the earth to its people. We prepare pies, fruit pies, and breads, and, you know, things with nuts, all of these things that celebrate the first harvest.
And when is that one?
That one is actually the beginning of August. It's August 2nd usually.
Okay. So on all of them, there's something that's very special for each one of them.
Yes.
And it's always welcoming something that is actually good for not only the people but also the earth.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We welcome things to not only be a part of us, but we're thanking the earth for giving us a part of herself. Because ultimately, this earth, the keepers, the people who take care of this earth are us. But every once in a while, the earth decides to strike back. Hurricanes, tornadoes, tidal waves, all those things are the earth itself trying to take back anything which is out of balance.
Which right now there appears to be a lot of things out of balance.
Yes, it does. And it's the way of the earth saying, hello, you need to wake up and you need to start looking around you and seeing how you're being a detriment to yourselves, to each other.
Which, again, I think is very important for people to do because they just appear to be starting to do that.
Yes.
And it's not that it's too late, but it's a long time coming.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
If somebody would like to get a hold of you, again, Lynn, can you give out your phone number and also the website again?
For Lothlorien?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, most definitely. My phone number is 708-743-6697, and the website for Lothlorien is www.elvinhome.org.
So if they want to get a hold of you, though, they need to call you on the phone in case they have questions or even if they may want to schedule a reading. Is that correct?
Right. Most definitely. They can also contact me via email.
Okay.
And I will give you that email address. It is my company email address because I own my company and I work just like everybody else.
Okay.
It is C as in Charlie, B as in boy, D as in dog, It is CBD_,
okay.
L as in Larry, T as in Tom, D as in dog, at MSN.com. I had to think for a moment.
That's all right. I'll do it all again.
Okay, it's CBD_LTD@MSN.com.
Okay, now the picture that they have up, that BBS put up for your bio.
Yes.
Can you explain that picture to the
listeners? Sure. Mm-hmm. That picture was taken several years ago when myself and my husband were hand fasted. A hand fasting is a witch wedding. It is a wonderful rite of passage for us because the majority of time, the people who are being joined together get together with the person who is going to officiate their ceremony and write the ceremony all together. There is a huge amount of input in what we see as our goals and our our passages within our life. A hand fasting is a witch's wedding. It basically binds us to one another for however long we choose, because the majority of Wiccans, they'll go through a hand fasting and never get married legally. My husband and I, actually, we went out on April Fool's Day before we were hand fasted. We actually went and got legally married, and then we're hand fasted about a month and a half later with all of our friends and our family in attendance. But the majority of time, people are getting hand fasted because they're wanting to join themselves with someone very, very spiritually. And that's what the basis of the hand fasting ceremony is. It is very, very spiritual. It is to bind you to another person, heart, body, mind, soul, and also karmically. What it means is that the two of you now share the same karma. You look at what's going on in your life as well as what's going on within your partner's life, and you two truly do become one.
Okay, and then Lynn, what happens if maybe that doesn't work out?
What happens if it usually doesn't work out, which is why the majority of Wiccans go through a hand fasting ceremony and don't get legally married, is if they're not legally married, even if they are legally married, they still need to go through something that dissolves that type of union of a hand fasting. There is a ceremony called a hand parting ceremony where one or both parties are present for it, and the cords that are used to tie the people in a hand fasting, because ultimately your hands are tied together in a hand fasting, that cord is ritually and ceremonial cut into two and then burned, symbolizing the end of that relationship. The two are now separate. Once again, they are not one. They are separate. They are free to go their own way. They take with them that which they brought to the relationship, and hopefully they are respectful of one another that they can let go. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
Okay, so it's kind of like an easier way for divorce.
Most definitely, most definitely. There are people who have actually gone to great lengths to have prenuptial agreements before hand fastings, just so that they can put into writing some type of formal agreement that, yes, we want to be together, but no, we don't want to legally get married, but we want something that's still going to protect each one of our assets. So it's basically like a regular prenuptial agreement. They have it notarized, they have it recorded, and it does become a part of their hand fasting agreement, so that if they do decide to break up or go their separate ways, they can. And they have some type of agreement in writing that says, okay, this is what you're taking, this is what I'm taking, and now we go our separate ways. And sometimes that in and of itself is enough to put aside some of the harsh feelings that one or both parties may feel toward one another.
Which I think is pretty important.
Most definitely.
How long does a hand fast usually take?
Hand fastings can take anywhere between 20 minutes, I've actually seen some done in 10, to actually probably about an hour, depending on what is a part of that ritual. There's so many things that can be written into a hand fasting ritual because, once again, the majority of the time that people are getting, when they're getting hand fasted, they're not having a ritual that has been written and used over and over and over again. They're having a very specific ritual that is tuned to them. It is written for them. It therefore becomes more meaningful because they have put into that ritual a huge amount of thought about what they want to say to one another.
Yeah, I think that's pretty important too, if people are going to be joined in anyway.
Most definitely. Most definitely. It also makes people think a little bit more about which direction they're going in and if they really truly do want to do this.
See, I think that our laws make it too easy to get married and too hard to get divorced.
Yes and no. Depending on what state you live in, it can make it very easy for you to get married. There are other states that have different laws that make it very, very difficult for you to get married. And just becomes very easy for you to get a divorce in some states. In other states, it's very, very difficult. So that's why you see a lot more people getting hand-fasted and not having, you know, not having the legal ties of a legal marriage.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, can you give out your phone number, your email address, and also the website for Law Flooring again, please?
Sure. My phone number is 708-743-6697. My email address is cbd_ltd@msn.com. And if you'd like to get a hold of Law Florian, you can do so at www.elvinhome.org.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you a question, and you can answer it or not. Okay. This is about your husband.
Okay.
Okay, because we didn't talk about him, so I think the listeners are probably a little curious about what your husband might do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know he's an artist.
My husband is an artist, but he is also, he is a field archaeologist as well as an anthropologist. So he definitely goes out and digs around in the boonies for arrowheads and stuff of that nature to find sacred sites that are, as of yet, undiscovered.
See, and that's pretty interesting because I think there's probably a lot of sacred sites that people don't have a clue that are there.
Most definitely.
And then they will do all kinds of things like uproot them and build on them, and then a lot
mm-hmm.
of strange things happen.
Right, most definitely. And that's basically what he and the people he works for go out and do, is they go out and they try to find where these sacred sites are, and stop any type of building or road construction that is going to go through them so that they can be properly worked through, and the artifacts that are found are actually given back to the specific nation that they belong to.
Again, that's pretty important because I don't think people realize how much problems and how much trouble can be caused by disturbing sacred land.
Most definitely. Most definitely. There's actually a road that goes between Milwaukee and Green Bay, and the road actually, it is straight as an arrow for hundreds of miles. And then all of a sudden, it curves off into one direction and then goes out for about a half a mile, and then comes back in about a half a mile, and then comes back in another half a mile and continues to go straight. The reason that it's curving around something is it's because it's curving around a burial site in that area. And so rather than stop the construction of the road, they just decided, well, they're going to go around it.
Which is probably a good idea.
Most definitely.
Now, we're almost out of time, but not quite. So there's one other thing I'd like you to mention while you're on air.
Okay.
And that is about clearing houses and things like that.
Uh-huh.
So go ahead.
I am a trained exorcist. When I say that, the first thing people think about is the movie. And while there are people out there who will do person-to-person exorcisms, I'm not one of them. I was trained how to do clearings of specific areas or dwellings, going into them and clearing out the area to make sure that there are no more problems within a house or within an area. The majority of people have found that their problems all started when either they or one of their children decided to use a Ouija board in the house or in that area, and all of a sudden they open up a door on the spiritual side of things, something comes through, and then they can't figure out how to shut that door. So I've been called to do several exorcisms on houses and places with regards to people using Ouija boards
Yeah, they're pretty bad. Okay, Lynn, we're just about out of time. So one more time, quickly, can you give out your phone number, your email address, and also the website for offline?
Sure, no problem. My phone number is 708-743-6697. My email address is cbd_ltd@msn.com. And the website for La Florian is www.elvinhome.org.
Great. Lynn, I'd like to thank you for being on the show. It's a lot of fun. I always have a good time talking with you. You've got so many.
Most definitely. Thank you so very much, Nancy.
You're very welcome. And for the lady that called in earlier and wanted to know from a relative what I got while I just heard your voice real quickly, is that whoever that relative is would like you to smile again. It's like you're not smiling, or you're not smiling like you used to. They're very much around you, but they want to see you smile. So with that, I wish everybody a very happy week. May God bless all of you. Lynn, thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, and thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Take care, and have a great week. Bye now.
Bye now.